This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. My name is Raymond Granville. Joining me in the studio is Joni Boyd. How's it going, Joni?
Yeah, good. Yeah, good to be here.
Keeping well. And Brahma's in the studio as well, keeping up the positive vibes. But before we go any further, a huge thank you to Jeff for another superb edition of On The Record. Always a pleasure. And of course, you can catch On The Record every weekday here at RTR FM from 9 in the a.m. Thanks also to Michaela for the news. She will be back at 12 o'clock. But this is the Indie Media Show. It's all the news, views, and those kind of things from the open publishing wires of the interwebs. All about citizen journalism, that kind of thing. And, yeah, bit of a diverse but interesting show this morning.
Jeff. Yeah. I had a chat with the organisers of the Common Ground Action Group. So this block of flats in Sydney called Common Ground, run by Mission Australia, was put into hard lockdown by New South Wales Health and Police. Like hard lockdown where they, you know, couldn't even leave their house. And they were subject to all sorts of invasions of privacy by police. And it was, you know, very poorly organized. People weren't getting their medication and stuff like that. So, I reached out to those guys and, spoke to them about how they resisted, essentially.
Totally. And I guess about the disparity in how different communities, particularly communities from a lower socioeconomic area, are treated in these circumstances.
Yeah. So this building had two cases, and then it was, I think, two cases. Be more specific later. But it only had a handful of cases, and it was thrown into hard lockdown. But then the building right next door had 11 cases, and it's in a soft lockdown, and is not the same kind of affordable and social housing block that Common Ground is.
So we'll be talking a bit about that later. We're also going to be chatting about the nuclear submarine deal. Sort of flown under the radar a little bit, unfortunately, I guess, of everything happening in regard to COVID-19. But the US and UK will be sharing the technology and expertise of Australia to help build nuclear-powered submarines as a part of a newly announced defence pact between the three countries. Now, this is a very, you know, serious and significant move that has sparked a lot of concern from anti-nuclear groups and the few anti-war groups that still exist in Australia, who are expressing anger over the deal that, and also worrying that it may be the Trojan horse for a nuclear power industry here in Australia. So to discuss this deal and some of its implications for, I guess, you know, our involvement in wars and also for the nuclear industry, a little later in the show, we're going to be speaking to Annette Brownlee. Annette is the chairperson of Independent and Peaceful Australia. So plenty of reasons to keep it locked to Indie Media this morning.
But for now, we're going to take a track from New Talk. This is Amethyst. Residents of Common Ground, an affordable and social housing complex in Sydney, run by Mission Australia, were recently put into a hard lockdown. Residents were not allowed to leave their homes for any reason. They were subject to invasions of privacy by police, given inadequate supplies and very little communication. This is a clearly disproportionate response to how other buildings have been treated by the state. I spoke to Safa and Robin, organisers of the Common Ground Action Group, who advocated for the needs of the building's residents. I started by asking them, who are the residents of Common Ground?
Well, there are at least three or four demographics here. Some of us are on affordable rent, and others are public housing, and others on social housing, I think. So we're quite diverse, really, and... some of us, work, some of us don't.
25% of the homes here are also a part of a special NRAS program. People that come out of jail on parole, and some people have disabilities that need special care, and some people are long-term homeless that come in for rehabilitation. So I think that's part of this, the program that Mission Australia run in the building.
So run us through the lockdown. I believe at the start of the month you got a few cases.
Yeah, so there was 4 cases. That's the reason they said they locked the building down. On Sunday, before the actual lockdown, they told us there were 2 cases and then that we have to go and test. Many of us went and tested on Monday, isolated until we got a negative result. And then after that, on Thursday morning, as I was leaving to go to work, I was told to not leave the building because there's 4 COVID cases and that the whole building is in lockdown.
So you only found out when you tried to leave the building. Was there any other communication?
No, nothing. I walked down the stairs and I could see commotion, and I walked down. It looked like a scene from, you know, the movie Outbreak.
Yeah, right.
You know, the Nazis. And everyone was in PPE, and like it felt like there's so much commotion and people talking to each other. I walked all the way. I passed through all of these people, and right at the end, when where the glass door is, I got stopped. I didn't get completely stopped. I was like wondering, maybe I should ask what's going on. And they asked me if I was if I lived in the building, and I said yes. And they said, oh, well, you can't leave. And I'm like, why? And they told me the building is in lockdown. And I said, and I told them, how come no one told me? And they said, well, there's a paper coming in now to be distributed under your door. And I was like, well, that could have been handy, you know, an hour ago, because it seemed like they had been in the building since 6 o'clock in the morning.
At the start of the building's lockdown, you also had like police, like without any IDs, like barge into people's homes and take them to like a drug and alcohol hospital.
So what happened is that the Section 62 lockdown order, they targeted 6 or 7 of the more vulnerable residents. Who may or may not have addictions or problems with maintaining the Section 62 health order. So what they did is they sent out a letter the night before saying that this was going to happen, that they were going to be moved to a different facility. But I don't think anybody got that because they just knocked on the door and barged into people's houses and basically ordered them out. And then no one had any time to prepare, and they basically rounded them up. And nobody was in. And the problem with that is that people were all in PPE. We couldn't tell who was police and who was who was from New South Wales Health. So what the problem was is that they just barged into this one. There's this one particular instance where they barged into someone's house, rounded them up at about 11:30 at night, no warning, no time to prepare. Put them on a bus, and then handed them a letter. I think that's when they did. They told them that they were being moved to a different facility, and they all rounded up and taken to the Concord Drug and Alcohol Hospital without their explicit permission.
Yeah, and when one resident asked, "Where are you taking me?" The cop told her to an undisclosed location. Like, what kind of country is this when you ask the police, "Where are you taking me?" And they tell you, we're not going to tell you where you're going. It sounds like an abduction to me. It doesn't sound very legal to me.
How are your needs looked after or withheld by New South Wales Health and Police?
Well, the building was firstly managed by Mission Australia, and then Mission Australia thought it was too hard for them to manage it, so they gave us up to New South Wales Health and the police. And the first 4 days, none of us were getting any fresh food. We were getting canned food, inappropriate food that I couldn't eat. Many of my neighbors could not eat the food they sent. They would send us frozen meals that many residents did not have a microwave, and other residents don't have the ability to heat their own food. So it was quite chaotic. Even our very, very basic needs were not met. Medication were not distributed. I needed medication and it wasn't there. Other people needed insulin and it wasn't there.
Some people needed, like there was one woman who waited almost 4 hours for her Ventolin. I mean, we recognize that COVID-19 and the Delta strain is really a dangerous situation. You know, we recognize that New South Wales Health were working hard to do that, but we think that the conditions behind which we had to put up with for at least the first 4 days were the most terrifying things anybody has experienced in a long time. I mean, we had no power.
Yep.
We were surrounded by police who were searching our things, searching for drugs.
Mm-hmm. Tell us more about that, them going through your things. I understand you had like a alcohol restriction that was 1 6-pack of beer, which for a lot of folks isn't actually that much for one night.
No, that's true. I mean, we're all Australian, right? They like a beer. I think I had a bottle of wine. The restrictions were where we ordered. I think a friend of ours actually delivered a gift, a set of gifts, a box full of spirits, and those were confiscated. The New South Wales Health had enforced the one bottle of wine or a 6-pack of beer a day, or a 375 cans of a mixed drink. So you can only have one of any of those a day. And I think that wasn't actually anywhere in that section 62. There's nowhere in the law that said that that's what they were enforcing. That's just what they decided for the building.
Oh my God! So they just made up that rule on the fly and enforced it.
Yeah, and then they took the booze and redistributed it to the building and put it in different bottles, smaller bottles. And one of the neighbors I have has been, you know, sober for 6 months. He opens the door and he finds a bottle of booze right in front of him, and he didn't order that. So,
what the hell?
We had to actually organize within ourselves in order to get the support we needed. I had my friends who... I have a great network here in Sydney, and I had friends bring hot food to some of the neighbors who couldn't cook on their own or didn't want to cook. And we had to arrange and reach out to our own networks in order to support our neighbors. Actually, Mission Australia called me the day before the lockdown and asked me about my dietary needs. And I gave them a whole list of dietary needs. And the next day I opened the door with a box full of canned food and normal milk. I'm lactose intolerant and I don't eat processed food. So they spent all this time with me on the phone and then they sent me a box of canned food. So it was...
So you mentioned to me earlier that the building next to yours is currently under a soft lockdown. Clearly the response of the police and New South Wales Health has been very different to how other apartment buildings have been treated during this Sydney lockdown. Can you shed some insight onto that?
Yeah, so when I asked that question, I said, why is the building next door, why did you lock us up for 4 cases when the building next door has 11 cases? I was told these exact words. They said to me, I was told that New South Wales Health does not have the resources to provide individualized support to the building next door because there's too many of them. But they had, apparently they had the resources to provide us with individualized support, which is completely bullshit because we didn't get individualized support for at least, you know, at least one week. And that was, we ended up getting support only because we had spoken to media and made a bit of noise online.
A lot of noise.
You absolutely did. That's how I found out about your action group, not through mainstream media, but through like Instagram stories. You were organizing a lot of actions while you were in the hard lockdown. You got people to stand in solidarity underneath the building and stuff like that.
Yes. Robin, do you want to talk
about it? It was amazing. So even behind, locked in our apartments, we all have balconies. And so the idea came that, people would exercise in pairs. and pretend to be exercising in order to, with protest banners and and bright colours. I think we chose purple and white.
Yeah.
And a lot of our rainbow community showed up as well. So the GLBT community is pretty strong in Sydney, and a lot of our fellow queers showed up and rode their bicycles and brought music, and we dropped some banners. We had people paint banners for us, and it was a lovely day. It was a lovely afternoon. Really amazed at that turnout.
Yeah, I mean, we did also make sure that everyone knows their rights and make sure to stress to people that they need to be exercising because that's within their rights, and wearing masks and social distancing. So we didn't, you know, just ask people to come and risk all of that without.
From the footage I saw, it seemed like everyone was being very responsible with you know, COVID safety and everything. Excellent. So you're out of a hard lockdown now. How are the residents in your building coping?
Oh, there's really such a drop in energy around here. It doesn't look to us that anybody's doing well post-lockdown.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of people, my neighbours and my more vulnerable neighbours, actually look much more disoriented and stressed. I don't think anybody's here.
Mm.
I think everybody has just packed up and left.
Yeah. Yeah, my next-door neighbor, who was forcibly removed from her apartment, just left straight away. As soon as, you know, the clock hit 12, she left like Cinderella. And then middle of the night, as soon as the clock was turned 12.
Well, you just don't feel safe in here anymore, really.
Are you afraid it's going to happen again? Are people afraid it's going to happen again?
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think that's something that they would do again.
Yeah, especially with the building next door, with the 11 cases.
Yeah.
And emotions are still heightened, and there's a lot of, you know,
anxiety,
like severe anxiety, I would say, in the building.
So does your action group have any plans for what's next?
Yeah, so tonight we're hosting, we've done a big flyer drop in our building, and we're hosting a community forum. And hopefully rolling community forums in the next couple of weeks. What we'd really like is for the rent for that two-week period to be returned to the residents, and also some compensation from confiscated goods from the New South Wales Police and New South Wales Health. And we also really want to hear a lot of our tenants and our neighbours to actually talk about that experience through a community forum. So we've contacted our local Greens MP, Jamie Parker, and he's agreed to help us set up a community forum with DLH staff and hopefully and New South Wales Health and the police, and also Mission Australia to help the community sort of try and heal from the trauma of that, and answer our questions about why it is that Mission Australia, it took 4 days for Mission Australia to contact their tenants in order to explain to them the situation, why it is they took so long to, we just need some accountability, really. Why did it take so long for Mission Australia to respond?
Yeah.
Why were we left in the dark about the hard lockdown? Why is it only after we started talking to the media did we actually get any action on our needs?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Things like that. Mm-hmm. And so accountability is extremely important, you know, especially when, you know, you're working with an institution that is supposedly meant to be doing all this good work for homeless people and people with disabilities and vulnerable people.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to be able to try and heal from that. And that's how we think we're going to proceed and go forward with it.
That was Safa and Robin, organisers of Common Ground Action Group, who advocated for residents of Common Ground, a social and affordable housing complex recently out of hard lockdown in Sydney.
And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. We'll be back soon talking about the announced nuclear submarine program here in Australia and a new pact between a bunch of, call them warmongers or a bunch of countries. But right now, we're going to go to a track by Run the Jewels. Here is a few words for the firing squad.
This is Strange Days.
Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Run the Jewels on RTRFM 92.1 with their track A Few Words for the Firing Squad. And this is the Indie Media Show with Ray, Joni and Brahma. We're with you until 12 noon when Rhiann Todhunter is going to be on your radio bringing you out to lunch. Now, Australian Peace, environmental and other activist groups and organisations are expressing their concern and opposition to the Morrison government's recent decision to join a trilateral security agreement between Australia, the United Kingdom and the United States, the AUKUS, or A-U-K-U-S, as well as the announced development of nuclear submarines. To discuss this recent announcement, we're joined now on the line by Annette Brownlee. Annette is the chairperson of Independent and Peaceful Australia. Thanks very much for joining us today, Annette.
Oh, you're welcome, Raymond. It's an important time in Australia's history.
It certainly is. And unfortunately, I mean, perhaps it speaks to, I guess, the current state of play in politics in this country, but this announcement has largely gone uncriticised, at least by major political parties, and it's seemingly floated under the radar. However, it seems to be a very significant step in regards to, I guess, exacerbating our military presence in the region. But can you just, I guess, if I could start by asking, how significant is this announcement in terms of Australia's, I guess, geopolitical and military relations?
Yeah, well, I'm sure most people would understand that this further cements Australia into the United States' military and political positioning to maintain their superpower status or their hegemony. The fact that they brought the United Kingdom into this new alliance, which basically is ANZUS without the New Zealanders, I think, indicative of a lot of things, really. But one of the things I would say is that the United States is actually grappling to find countries that are prepared to take this sort of positioning with them. It's very interesting to note that although there's been much made of the Quad, Japan is not part of this, and neither are any of the other countries in the Southeast Asian region. So, you know, I think that's, in my mind, that's what it's indicative of. However, what it is doing is really pushing Australia out as the Trojan horse for the United States to be their spokesperson, their latest American base. I mean, it's really serious just what we have been committed to by this government.
And a lot has been made, I guess, not so much about that, but there's been a lot of talk, obviously, about the reaction from the French in regard to us now dumping the diesel submarine program that we'd previously committed to. But yeah, this move that really solidifies our allegiance to the United States, I guess in some ways it isn't anything new, given that Australia's very much been, as some might refer to, the lapdog for the American, empire for some time. But And what does it sort of say about also American sort of military strategy and this sort of looming, I guess you almost call it, conflict with China? And where does that place Australia in that potential conflict between the US and China?
Well, very much the meat in the sandwich, unfortunately. Or maybe it's more than that. We have agreed to accept the expansion of US military forces and their materiel on our territory. I think it's worthwhile thinking about the fact that the people in Okinawa have been fighting for, you know, decades and decades to get rid of the Marines and the facilities and bases off their territory. And there has been a degree of success there. So they are moving some of the Marines and materiel and bases out of Okinawa, some of which is going to Guam. But Guam is a tiny little island, so, you know, it's looking very much like Australia will become the next big base for the United States. And we know from what we've been told that this AUKUS agreement will increase the number of Marines in Darwin. Peter Dutton said possibly threefold. There's already 2,500 there, so we're looking at, you know, 15,000 and maybe more. We're also told that we will be storing US military material and weaponry. We will store a fuel dump in the north of Australia. These are all pre-positioning for aggressive military action, i.e. war, by the United States. And Australia falling in line is the most irresponsible act that this government has ever taken. I think it started with the pivot and with Julia Gillard making that announcement with Obama, and that was what led to the formation of IPAN, because we could see this was the thin edge of the wedge, and we were really opening ourselves up to be the lapdog of the United States, but also to be a target in the event that that this does develop into the unthinkable, a war with China. And China has already said quite clearly, you know, in the event of war, Pine Gap would be targeted. And, you know, if we've got nuclear-powered and armed vessels in cities around Australia, they too would be targets. So this is a really big move by this government, and one that we really need to stand together to oppose into the future.
We're speaking to Annette Brownlee, who is the chairperson for Independent and Peaceful Australia. You mentioned there Pine Gap, Annette, and I think one thing that definitely is worth mentioning is the sort of the changing nature of warfare. I mean, at the beginning of the 21st century, we saw massive demonstrations against the invasion of Iraq, but there's been somewhat of a lessening or a total loss of an anti-war movement here in Australia and elsewhere around the world. And perhaps part of that is due to the fact that these wars have been ongoing for so long, obviously in Afghanistan, Iraq and elsewhere. And also the changing nature of warfare and the fact that now, you know, bases such as Pine Gap perhaps play an even greater role in actually, you know, getting troops into these areas. And also we have the whole issue of drone strikes and so forth, where perhaps it isn't so obvious anymore, or perhaps it's so obvious that we've even forgotten in a way. What do you think in terms of the ways in which warfare sort of plays out now and how that perhaps affects our sort of our collective understanding of it, and also perhaps our lack of action and response to these wars?
Oh, there's a lot to unpack there, Raymond. You know, and it is true that we haven't had a mass movement for peace and against war really since it faded after the Iraq War, and that did last maybe for 5-6 years after the beginning of the Iraq War. As one of the organisers of the big protest in Brisbane at the time, with 100,000 people on the streets, it was quite an amazing time. But understandably, that does fade when there is no sort of significant change and things just chug along and other things take over in people's thinking. And you know, today we've got a pandemic underway and people are having to cope with lockdowns and worrying about their health and their jobs and everything else. So it's not surprising that you don't see an immediate reaction from people. But that's our task. That's our task as progressive people in the community, is to educate, inform, organise, get people connecting, and be active, because this we can't just let this lie. It is too serious.
It certainly is. I just also wanted to ask you a little bit about one element of this recent announcement that has been covered a little bit, but it's not only does this mean, an acceleration in terms of our position geopolitically in terms of the military-industrial complex or the global military-industrial complex, but many have said that it might also act as somewhat of a Trojan horse for a nuclear power industry here in Australia. And that is of particular concern, of course, for environmentalists and anti-nuclear activists. Of course, Australia has a long history of opposing nuclear power, and rather successfully in many states at least. Do you think that these nuclear subs could foresee an expansion of nuclear power here in Australia?
well, it's almost a given, isn't it? Those that have been pushing to develop nuclear power in Australia over, well, really forever, are going to see this as a green light for them to get cracking. And although, you know, Morrison was clear to say that this wouldn't happen, but you know, it's pretty clear that there'll be those that will be lobbying very hard to develop nuclear power stations for, you know, using that as a rationale that we're going to have nuclear powered submarines, which won't even be available for use for another 20 years. So I don't know how they can justify saying this is what we need for our immediate situation to deal with the increasingly aggressive behaviour of China. I mean, how often do you hear that term, increasingly aggressive behaviour? It's like a mantra through the media. And really, if we look at China, there is no indication that China has any intention of invading any other country other than its own. And in their minds, that includes Taiwan. So that is still, that potential is there. But when you look beyond the Taiwan situation, there is absolutely no indication that China has intention to invade other countries. They have risen as a huge economic and powerful country, rich in the sense that people now are very educated in China, and their level of well-being in the society has increased markedly over the last 20 years. So, you know, the message really from IPAN is that we need to do an about turn. We need to be looking at cooperation rather than conflict and competition, as Joe Biden puts it, you know, that we're in competition with China. Well, you know, that's how the Americans see it, because they're threatened by the rise of China in the sense of their control that they've had really since the Second World War. But they're prepared to undergo this process, risking a Third World War, which, you know, with 9.2 billion people on the planet, would be just catastrophic, and we must not let that happen.
And sadly, we've thrown our lot in it, but hopefully people will continue to resist the expansion of the Australian war machine. Thank you so much for speaking to us today, Annette. Great.
Hey, can I just mention that we do have a petition going, and it is on the IPAN website, so it's ipan.org.au. Please go to it and add your name to the petition objecting, protesting about the AUKUS agreement and the nuclear submarines.
Certainly. That was Annette Brownlee, who is the chairperson for Independent and Peaceful Australia. Thanks again so much for speaking to us, Annette.
Thank you, Raymond.
And this is the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. Right now, here's Combat Wombat with their track Asylum.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.
Combat Wombat with Asylum. You are on RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show. And now to some headlines. In the US, thousands of migrants currently being held in the Texan city of Del Rio, many of them Haitian, are set to be put on deportation flights by Customs and Border Protection, who have sent hundreds of additional personnel to the area and closed a vital crossing for migrants entering the US from Mexico. The Biden administration claims this effort is to reduce crowding and improve conditions for migrants on US soil.
And in related news, political turmoil in Haiti is growing after Prime Minister Ariel Henry replaced the country's justice minister last Thursday, only days after firing a top public prosecutor who sought to charge Henry in connection with the July assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. The prosecutor, who also sought to prevent Henry from leaving Haiti, said the Prime Minister had communicated with a key suspect on the night Moïse was killed. On Wednesday, the head of Haiti's Council of Ministers resigned in response to the prosecutor's firing.
In Afghanistan, and survivors of a US drone strike in Kabul on August 29 say that Washington's apology for the strike that accidentally killed 10 members of a family, including 7 children, is not enough. Survivor Amal Ahmedi said to the Associated Press that the people responsible for the strike should be put to justice by the US government.
And the World Meteorological Organization warns in a new report that governments are failing far short of the Paris Climate Agreement's goal of limiting global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius. The UN Weather Agency says only immediate large-scale reductions in greenhouse gas emissions can avert a global catastrophe. A new report also by the World Bank warns that without urgent action, the climate crisis could force 216 million people to leave their homes by 2050. Most of the migration will be driven by water scarcity, decreasing crop productivity and rising sea levels.
In the UK, the NHS has won an appeal against a ruling that would have made transgender teens have to go before a judge rather than a doctor to prove their ability to consent to puberty blockers. The safe and reversible medication is an essential and often life-saving treatment for transgender teens suffering from gender dysphoria.
And in Argentina, tens of thousands of people led a march in Buenos Aires last Thursday, protesting the country's economic crisis, chronic unemployment and a worsening poverty. The march came only days after primary elections were held in Argentina, where the political coalition of President Alberto Fernandez suffered a massive loss, triggering fears Fernandez's government may lose its majority in Congress this November. A political crisis is already unfolding, with Vice President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner spearheading what many are calling a cabinet rebellion against President Fernandez.
And back in Australia, and the Muruguppin family, also known as the Bilola family, seeking asylum in Australia, have had their visas extended by 3 months as their years-long legal battle against deportation to Sri Lanka continues. They will still not be allowed to return to their community in Bilola and are being kept in Perth. Finally, the eastern barred bandicoot has become the first Australian animal to have its conservation status changed from extinct in the wild to endangered after over 30 years of conservation efforts.
Some positive news, I guess, to end the show this week. I hope you've enjoyed the program. We'll be back next week, of course. Thanks, Joni.
No worries. Thank you.
Yeah, another excellent addition. Keep it locked to RTRFM is coming up shortly after the news with Michaela. Rhianna Todhunter is taking you out to lunch, all your Monday afternoon new music needs. As I said, we'll be back next week at 11 a.m. In the meantime, you can head along to rtrfm.com.au and restream the show, listen to the podcast, or you can also head along to our SoundCloud and listen to any of our interviews that we've done over the many years.
And as we always say here on Indie Media, don't hate the media.
Become the media. Here's a bit of Siobhan Cochin to take you to the news. Have a great day.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?